We pick where we ended up last week, so that's chapter 30, verse 25, and I'll read through to chapter 31, well, the end of it, verse 55. I hope my voice holds up as well as Amy's did last week. Everyone found it? Right, let's hear God's word. After Rachel gave birth to Joseph, Jacob said to Laban, "Send me on my way so that I can go back to my own homeland. Give me my wives and children for whom I have served you, and I will be on my way. You know how much work I've done for you." But Laban said to him, "If I have found favor in your eyes, please stay. I have learned by divination that the Lord has blessed me because of you." He added, "Name your wages and I will pay them." Jacob said to him, "You know how I have worked for you and how your livestock has fared under my care. The little you had before I came has increased greatly, and the Lord has blessed you wherever I have been. But now, when may I do something for my own household? What shall I give you?" he asked. "Don't give me anything," Jacob replied. "But if you will do this one thing for me, I will go on tending your flocks and watching over them. Let me go through all your flocks today and remove from them every speckled or spotted sheep, every dark-colored lamb, and every spotted or speckled goat. They will be my wages. And my honesty will testify for me in the future. Whenever you check on the wages you've paid me, any goat in my possession that is not speckled or spotted, or any lamb that is not dark colored, will be considered stolen." "Agreed," said Laban. "Let it be as you've said." That same day he removed all the male goats that were streaked or spotted, and all the speckled or spotted female goats, all that had white on them, and all the dark-colored lambs, and he placed them in the care of his sons. Then he put a three-day journey between himself and Jacob, while Jacob continued to tend the rest of Laban's flocks. Jacob, however, took fresh-cut branches from poplar, almond, and plane trees and made white strips on them by peeling the bark and exposing the white inner wood of the branches. Then he placed the peeled branches in all the watering troughs so that they would be directly in front of the flocks when they came to drink. When the flocks were in heat and came to drink, they mated in front of the branches, and they bore young that were streaked or speckled or spotted. Jacob set apart the young of the flock by themselves, but made the rest face the streaked and dark-colored lambs that belonged to Laban. Thus he made separate flocks for himself and did not put them with Laban's animals. Whenever the stronger females were in heat, Jacob would place the branches in the troughs in front of the animals, so that they would mate near the branches. But if the animals were weak, he would not place them there. So the weak animals went to Laban and the strong ones to Jacob. In this way, man grew exceedingly prosperous and came to own large flocks and female and male servants and camels and donkeys. Jacob heard that Laban's sons were saying, "Jacob has taken everything our father owned and has gained all this wealth from what belonged to our father." And Jacob noticed that Laban's attitude towards him was not what it had been. Then the Lord said to Jacob, "Go back to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you." So Jacob sent word to Rachel and Leah to come out to the fields where his flocks were. He said to them, "I see that your father's attitude towards me is not what it was before, but the God of my father has been with me. You know that I've worked for your father with all my strength, yet your father has cheated me by changing my wages 10 times. However, God has not allowed him to harm me. If he said, the speckled ones will be your wages, then all the flocks gave birth to speckled young. And if he said, the streaked ones will be your wages, then all the flocks bore streaked young. So God has taken away your father's livestock and has given them to me. In the breeding season, I once had a dream in which I looked up and saw that the male goats mating with the flocks were streaked, speckled, or spotted. The angel of God said to me in the dream, Jacob. I answered, here I am. And he said, look up and see that all the male goats mating with the flock are streaked, speckled, or spotted. For I have seen all that Laban has been doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar and where you made a vow to me. Now, leave this land at once and go back to your native land. And Rachel and Leah replied, do we still have any share in the inheritance of our father's estate? Does he not regard us as foreigners? Not only has he sold us, but he has used up what was paid for us. Surely all the wealth that God took away from our father belongs to us and our children. So, do whatever God has told you. Then Jacob put his children and his wives on camels, and he drove all his livestock ahead of him, along with all the goods he had accumulated in Paddan Aram, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. When Laban had gone to shear his sheep, Rachel stole her father's household gods. Moreover, Jacob deceived Laban the Aramean by not telling him he was running away. So he fled all he had, crossed the river Euphrates, and headed for the hill country of Gilead. On the third day, Laban was told that Jacob had fled. Taking his relatives with him, he pursued Jacob for 7 days and caught up with him in the hill country of Gilead. Then God came to Laban, Aramean, in a dream at night, said to him, be careful not to say anything to Jacob, either good or bad. Jacob had pitched his tent in the hill country of Gilead when Laban overtook him, and Laban and his relatives camped there too. Then Laban said to Jacob, what have you done? You've deceived me, and you've carried off my daughters like captives in war. Why did you run off secretly and deceive me? Why didn't you tell me, so that I could send you away with joy and singing to the music of tambourines and harps? You didn't even let me kiss my grandchildren, my daughters, goodbye. You have done a foolish thing. I have the power to harm you. But last night, the God of your father said to me, be careful not to say anything to Jacob, either good or bad. Now, you have gone off because you longed to return to your father's household. But why did you steal my goods? Jacob answered Laban, I was afraid because I thought you would take your daughters away from me by force. But if you find anyone who has your gods, that person shall not live. In the presence of our relatives, see for yourself whether there is anything of yours here with me, and if so, take it. Now Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen the gods. So Laban went into Jacob's tent, and into Leah's tent, and into the tent of the two female servants, and he found nothing. After he came out of Leah's tent, he entered Rachel's tent. Now Rachel had taken the household gods and put them inside her camel's saddle and was sitting on them. Laban searched through everything in the tent, but found nothing. Rachel said to her father, don't be angry, my lord, that I cannot stand up in your presence. I'm having my period. So he searched, but he could not find the household gods. Jacob was angry and took Laban to task. What is my crime? He asked Laban. How have I wronged you that you hunt me down? Now that you have searched through all my goods, what have you found that belongs to your household? Put it here in front of your relatives and mine, and let them judge between the two of us. I have been with you for 20 years now. Your sheep and goats have not miscarried, nor have I eaten rams from your flocks. I did not bring you animals torn by wild beasts. I bore the loss myself. And you demanded payment from me for whatever was stolen by day or night. This was my situation. The heat consumed me in the daytime and the cold at night, and sleep fled from my eyes. It was like this for the 20 years I was in your household. I worked for you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your flocks, and you changed my wages 10 times. If the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had not been with me, you would surely have sent me away empty-handed. But God has seen my hardships and the toil of my hands, and last night he rebuked you. Laban asked Jacob, "The women are my daughters." Laban answered Jacob, "The women are my daughters. The children are my children, and the flocks are my flocks. All you see is mine. Yet what can I do today about these daughters of mine, or about the children they have borne? Come now, let's make a covenant, you and I, and let it serve as a witness between us." So Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar. He said to his relatives, "Gather some stones." So they took stones and piled them in a heap, and they ate there by the heap. Laban called it Jigar Sahadutha, and Jacob called it Galeed. Laban said, "This heap is a witness between you and me today." That is why it was called Galeed. It was also called Mizpah, because he said, "May the Lord keep watch between you and me when we are away from each other. If you ill-treat my daughters, or if you take any wives besides my daughters, even though no one is with us, remember that God is a witness between you and me." Laban also said to Jacob, "Here is this heap, and there is this pillar I have set up between you and me. This heap is a witness, and this pillar is a witness, that I will not go past this heap to your side to harm you, and that you will not go past this heap and pillar to my side to harm me. May the God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us." So Jacob took an oath in the name of the fear of his father Isaac. He offered a sacrifice there in the hill country and invited his relatives to a meal. After they had eaten, they spent the night there. Early the next morning, Laban kissed his grandchildren and his daughters and blessed them. Then he left and returned home. Rob, can I?
Can you hear me okay? Oh, brilliant. Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm back. I can't remember when the last time was. I feel it probably wasn't a year and a half. I think it was a little bit less than that, but it is really nice to be with you again. I really love when there's free prayer and people just declare the praise of the Lord. It's really good, and I was really glad to hear some of the themes that people were praying for and some of the things that you said already, and that's all what this passage is about today. So I'm going to pray, and then we'll get started in thinking about what this is saying to us. Father God, thanks so much for time to be in your word today. Please help us hear what you want to say to us. Your spirit, help us understand it. Please help us think in the days and weeks to come about how we might live our lives according to your word. Amen. So I wonder what, it's quite a long passage, isn't it? It's quite a vivid story. I wonder what stuck out to you most. from Jacob's story today, I really got a sense it's kind of like soap opera vibes. It's quite an interesting segment of Jacob's life. These seemingly magical, mystical breeding techniques. I really don't know how that works. Maybe it's the secret of meeting between Jacob and his wife, deciding, yep, we're going to flee from Laban. Perhaps it was that moment where Rachel steals her father's household gods, and you kind of think, why did you do that? What's going on there? Maybe it's the chase. Maybe it's the moment where Laban is inspecting the tents. Will he find the idols? We don't know. It is a passage infused with drama. But I think maybe a better way of kind of asking that question, what part sticks out to you most, maybe a better way of asking that is actually, what part did you kind of particularly resonate with in this story? What are the themes that came through all those happenings? What did you particularly resonate with? Maybe it was the complex nature of this family life. It's quite a complicated family. It's a large family, and it's got lots of kind of complications associated with it. Perhaps you can kind of emphasize that a little bit. We remember, whether it was when you were young or with family or friends now, times of heightened emotions or times where people wind you up the wrong way or kind of put you under their thumb. We can all kind of empathize with that. Or maybe what resonated with you, particularly out of the kind of all that messiness associated with this family, maybe you really enjoyed that moment of resolution at the end of chapter 31, where the family does finally kind of sit down together, they eat together, they sing together. Grandpa Laban gets to kiss his grandchildren goodbye. But it is quite a solemn moment. It's definitely not carefree after all that's just happened, but it is a good moment in the kind of context of that. It has a sweetness to it after what's just come before. Maybe you can resonate with that. Think of times of family or friends, times of blessing, times where it's not always been easy, but something has kind of reconciled and it's been valued. Or maybe, like me, I think what I resonated most in this story was kind of that situation Jacob found himself in at the very beginning of what we read tonight, towards the end of chapter 30, kind of verses 29-30. You kind of think of Jacob kind of caught between a rock and a hard place. He's finding himself in a position where he wants to go back to his homeland. He wants to follow what God has promised to bring him back to his father's household. He wants to go, but now he has this family, this very large family with wives and kids, and he has no real money or livestock or possessions of his own. And he thinks back to why he left his homeland in the first place. It was to escape his brother Esau, from whom he stole the birthright and received his father's blessing instead of Esau. That was a complicated situation. And now Jacob's finding himself, he's worked for Laban. He's worked really hard for Laban. He's been working for about 14 years at this point, and he's caused Laban's farm to flourish. He's gone above and beyond. It was really good just reading that again there about how he stood out in scorching heat and battled the kind of colds of night and all those sorts of things that he just described. And now he wants to go. He wants to put his own household first. He wants to put his family first. But he needs his uncle's blessing to go. He needs Laban's blessing. And Laban is not going to let Jacob go that easily. Not when Jacob is such a moneymaker. You can kind of feel it, can't you? Working hard, day in, day out, the weeks rolling by, turning into months, turning into years, another sheep dewormed, another trough cleared out, another kind of trip to the watering hole to feed the flock, all that sorts of things. Every day. And every day, he's thinking back to that dream he had. You probably heard about a couple of sermons ago, about 14 years ago by this point for him, that dream where God appeared to him and declared himself as the God of his father Isaac and the grandfather Abraham, and told him in chapter 28, I will give you descendants, I'll give you and your descendants this land. Those promises given to Abraham flowing through him, flowing through Jacob. And God also added that I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go. I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. So Jacob knows he's kind of God's chosen leader, and his family are God's people at this moment. He's kind of the leader of an infant nation, and he's stuck feeding sheep on a farm for what seems like an eternity every day, working under a man who has deceived him, a man who tells him, name me your wage, I'll pay whatever you want, and then manipulates that situation and actually tricks him into another 7 years' work. You saw that last week. A man who just kind of sees, you know, see that cartoon image of like the cartoon character with dollar signs in his eyes? It's kind of that kind of vibe, isn't it? He sees his son as a moneymaker more than a son-in-law. Jacob is absolutely stuck. But we see in this passage that God is still with him. So that's the first heading that I'm kind of bringing to you today. The first aspect of this story that we're going to look at today, when Jacob is stuck, God provides. So when Jacob is stuck, God provides. See in verse 25, Jacob begs Laban, send me on my way so I can go back to my own homeland. And with that actual, like, kind of added transactional note or plea, you know how much work I've done for you. And then again in verse 30, he says, the little you had before I came has increased greatly, and the Lord has blessed you wherever I have been. But now may I do something for my own household. It's kind of good to see Jacob acknowledging that it is God's blessing there. I think it's quite good to see Jacob leading his family quite well. I'm not sure we've seen that kind of character of Jacob as much previously. Anyway, they work out a deal. They work out this kind of handshake moment that the spotty or streak livestock would be Jacob's. The kind of unblemished livestock would be Laban's. I kind of see Laban seeming kind of kind here. He seems kind of, you know, we're maybe a little bit untrustworthy of that. But before the ink is dry, yep, Laban has actually changed the deal. He gives almost all the livestock to his sons, not to Jacob. The passage later goes on to say how Laban changed the wages and they gave to Jacob 10 times. It is absolutely not fair. But that's just the way Laban plays the game. He deals himself a loaded hand. Laban probably thinks this is never going to work out very well for Jacob. He's probably feeling quite chuffed with what he's done. But we see that Jacob is shrewd. He does that whole selective breeding thing. He breeds the more spotty sheep and goats. And over time, he breeds those spotty sheep and goats to be stronger than Laban's flock. I don't know, yeah, you probably listened to the passage and going, what on earth is that all about trees and fresh, you know, stripy trees and all that? How does that work? I would imagine that the science behind all that probably wouldn't stand up in a university setting today, since we're in a university area. I don't think it kind of applies to scientific method, but that isn't actually what's really important here. It does explain the kind of mechanics, but actually that's not really the point of what we're kind of trying to take from that. I think, if anything, actually, the questionable science that is provided for us, I think through our kind of modern lens, our modern eyes today, that probably only kind of backs up what the author was actually trying to show here. I think the real point is that it's God who's doing all this. It's actually God who's orchestrating this kind of success in selective breeding here. It's God who's holding the cards, not Laban. So if you see it, verse 43 of chapter 30, in this way, the man grew exceedingly prosperous and came to own large flocks and female and male servants and camels and donkeys. I think it's really interesting, because I think you could equally look at this, and I think I definitely did in my first reading, I kind of thought, is Jacob just being a bit wily here? Is he up to his old scheming tricks? Is he? I think it's probably a fair enough accusation, knowing what we've seen of Jacob so far. His nature is kind of always to be up to something, trying to control the situation, trying to bring about his own way. He is his uncle's nephew. But note what chapter 31, verses 8 to 13 kind of shows us. So there's a little bit of jumping about this afternoon, but it shows us that God explicitly did ordain this. God is doing this for Jacob. God is taking away Laban's livestock and giving it to Jacob. He's kind of preparing Jacob to go home, almost. God has seen all that Laban has done to Jacob. He's seen that Jacob has worked hard over all these years, following God's path, and now God is providing a way back to his native land. Can you imagine the relief it would have been to hear God speak in verse 3, if you were Jacob in that moment, verse 3 of chapter 31? What a relief it would have been to have that dream that came after kind of 20 years almost of since he last heard God speak to him explicitly, 20 years since he made that promise, 20 years since he, you know, has every day had to work on the farm really hard, endure those harsh sunny afternoons and those freezing cold nights. all the time wondering, when, God? What's going on here? How long will I have to endure this? How long will I have to go on putting up with Laban's manipulation? How long will I have to kind of keep doing this every day whilst my family grows, whilst I'm kind of thinking, when's time to go back? So what a relief it would have been to hear God's voice right then and there. Not that kind of Jacob necessarily ever lost trust in God throughout that whole time. I listened last week, and yeah, you saw God has been really present in Jacob's kind of family growth and establishing his family. And God has been really kind of involved in that process. So God's not been far away, but it has been 20 years of waiting, stuck under Laban's thumb. I wonder whether sometimes, if we're in a comparable situation, how we might feel towards God in that. Maybe you've been stuck in a job or a relationship or something, a situation a bit like Jacob's, where it's a daily grind, it's causing you anxiety. You're getting really tired of hourly frustrations. You're almost feeling physically scared to go into work, or just to kind of, you're on edge as you leave your house in the morning, anything like that. Perhaps you've experienced a boss or a colleague a bit like Laban, and they might be kind of supportive and nice and cheery on the outside, but as soon as your back is turned, they can be manipulative and changeable on a whim. It's quite troubling. You can feel really desperate and you're stuck. You've tried to apply to other jobs and nothing's kind of working out. No application you've submitted has got anywhere. It's a time of waiting with an unsure end and a heavy load. Where do we turn for our help in that? How do we feel about God in that? I think if we look to this passage for wisdom, the take-home point is not necessarily that we should take matters into our own hands. That's not what it's saying. It's not telling us to exact revenge or to make your boss's life as difficult as they're making yours. That's not the point here. In fact, it actually shows us how hard Jacob worked for his boss, even in that situation. Now, just on a side note there, of course, if there is a situation that you find yourself in where there is abuse or physical harm or anything like that, of course, that is not something to wait in. That's something to go to the authorities about or to report or not to submit to. I'm not talking necessarily about a situation like that. I'm talking about a situation where it's hard and there's no end in sight. So I think the application in that is actually to give the situation to God. It's to trust God with the day-to-day now, and to trust God with the future to come, to put everything into God's hands until the moment where we can act for change, or something does change, or God changes the situation for us. And that doesn't mean that God will give us what we want in that moment, in that waiting. It doesn't necessarily mean that he'll instantly take us out of hard times. It doesn't mean that we'll ever necessarily receive such a clear answer as Jacob did in verse 3. But he will provide us with what we need, and he can be trusted with our fears in the meantime. I think I found myself in a situation a little bit like that about a year and a half ago, actually. So it might well have been when I was here one last time. I was in a job for about 6 months. I'd started the job and quickly realized it wasn't the right fit for me. I'll not go into why. I might have told a few of you before anyway. But it was hard. I was finding it really difficult. And over a couple of months, I started feeling quite anxious about it. Kind of every morning, I was waking up very anxious about the situation. If you talk to my dad, he would tell you about many upset phone calls. Kind of, I was dreading every morning before going into work. And my instinct was to try and take it into my own hands. I was probably just thinking, I'm going to write my resignation letter right now and hand it in this morning. And I wanted to just walk away. But then you kind of think, well, I have rent to pay and I need to eat, and my parents and family live in Northern Ireland and I live in Oxford, and Oxford's very expensive. I couldn't just walk away. You can't just quit in that situation. I couldn't anyway. So I had to put in hard work over a period of months with an unsure end date. And that work was just to try and stay sane, never mind actually do the work that I was supposed to do. Waiting for God to give me a direction or to change the situation. And that did come. He did provide for me. I was only in that job for about 6 months before something else was provided that was a lot more suitable. But in that waiting, with that unsure end, God provided me with church family that I could talk to, provided me with friends that I could have fun with and talk to, a bit of relief. he had my parents just on the phone, and I could pray to him and cast my anxieties on the Father who loves me. That's a promise in the New Testament to cling on to in a moment like that. But also looking to the future, you know, Jesus has won a way home for me. You can look to that as well. And it's a little picture here of Jesus kind of, or just as Jacob was kind of promised to go back to his homeland, well, Jesus has already won our way up to heaven. That's something to cling on to as well in that moment. So that's our first point. When Jacob is stuck, God provided for him. And God said to Jacob that he was with him, watching it over him wherever he would go. When Jacob was stuck, God provides. Think a little bit more about how that relates to us in a few moments. Two more aspects, two more headings, a little bit kind of quicker through this time. When Jacob flees, God protects. And when Jacob fears, God watches over him. So when Jacob flees, God protects. And when Jacob fears, God watches over him. So when Jacob flees, God protects. Jacob collects his winnings, and the sons of Laban, his cousins, look on at him at verse 31. They're annoyed. They're probably quite jealous. You can feel the danger levels increasing. Laban, who for so long has held all this power over Jacob, doesn't look on him with favor anymore. There's a real sense of danger here. Laban could become a real threat. If he were to overpower Jacob, this promise given to a fledgling kind of infant nation could be wiped out. This new nation is suddenly under threat. But Jacob knows that God will protect them because God, he says it, God has been with me. So Jacob takes the lead this time. He holds a secret family crisis meeting, and they, him and his wives, all unanimously decide to go. Laban's daughters, his wives, feel much the same about their father as he does. So they wait until Laban is far away, shearing sheep, whatever he's doing, and they do a runner. But Laban finds out, and the chase is on. That kind of soap opera stuff is kind of ringing in my ears again. Now the next section is quite revealing. Laban is kind of like, I think there's a clear sense of self-righteousness in what he's kind of saying and doing. This kind of self-grandeur driving him, his fury. I would imagine he's kind of chasing after Jacob with a sense of, I will take back what is mine. He's saying something like that in his head. He probably had in mind maybe to harm Jacob and to bring his daughters and grandchildren and livestock back, adding back to his own number. I'm not too sure, painting the picture, you can imagine for yourselves what the kind of heat and the tenseness of the situation would have been like. But in his fury, God stops him. God intervenes and warns Laban in a dream. Be careful not to say anything to Jacob, good or bad. Laban is stopped in his tracks by the God of Jacob, who has shown himself to be completely powerful and also to be on Jacob's side. I think Laban probably would have listened. So what comes out in kind of when Laban speaks to Jacob, I'm going to just check my verse references. I think it's verse 26 of 31. Laban says to Jacob, what have you done? You've deceived me. You've carried off my daughters like captives in war. I could have led on a big party for you. I should have been able to properly kiss my daughters and my grandchildren goodbye. We could have had the drums out. We could have a nice soiree. How could you have done this to me, Jacob? How could you have gone without telling me? I think it's actually quite emotionally manipulative. I think actually verse 29 is probably a more accurate representation of what Laban was really thinking and feeling. It is in my power to do you harm. I will take back what is mine. That kind of, you can't hear that in anything except a very sinister tone. But the God of your father has spoken to me. He told me not to say anything good or bad to you. Do nothing, do no harm to Jacob. I think it's clear to see that only God is truly powerful. And when Jacob flees, God has protected him, even in that chase. And again, he protects Jacob and his family. After that moment where Rachel, I don't know, rather impulsively, rather unexpectedly steals the household gods, you kind of think, why did she do that? I'm not too sure. I think we're meant to kind of go, what? That's quite it's quite bold. Why does he need to do that? I think, incidentally, like, there's quite a few pictures here which I think are really helpful to kind of understand human nature a bit more in this kind of soap opera vibe. There's moments where these characters are both sinful and impulsive and deceitful. Moments where you do go, why did you do that? But there's also moments where they're really trusting God and working hard. It's a really mixed picture of how these people are doing, how God's chosen family are doing. But anyway, that's a side note. Jacob says, if anyone has stolen your household gods, they will be killed. Not knowing that his beloved wife, his darling Rachel, was the one who stole them. But God protects Rachel again. She's on her period, and which comes as a grace at this moment because she hides the gods under her camel saddle that she was sitting on, knowing that Laban wouldn't make her stand up. I think it shows there's quite a contrast there about how powerful God is to orchestrate these situations and then how inanimate the household gods are, doing absolutely nothing because they're inanimate objects. They're unable to overthrow the situation, and God protects Rachel and the family in that moment. So when Jacob flees, God protects. But when Jacob fears, God watches over him. I think there are two senses in this passage where fear is mentioned. There's two kind of different kind of ways fear is kind of presented. We're jumping a little bit over the chapter here. I think if we look at verse 31 of chapter 31, it says that Jacob answered Laban, I was afraid because I thought you would take your daughters away from me by force. Jacob was scared, was afraid of Laban, and quite understandably, Laban was in control. He had all the power for so long. He was hot-tempered. And recently, his attitude to Jacob had soured. And it was that fear that motivated Jacob to flee in the first place, to be cowardly. Instead of talking to Laban and being clear and leaving on right terms, respectful terms, he fled. Even though just days before, Jacob had openly said, the God of my father has been with me, in verse 5, and God has not allowed him to harm me. He's already declared how God is his protector and has been on his side, and he remembers those promises of God, that I will be with you. Wouldn't it have just been better if Jacob had trusted God here? Trusted God to protect him no matter what Laban's reaction would have been, whether it had been hot fury, firing away, or whether it had been other calm, manipulative words. Whatever Laban's reaction, wouldn't it have been better if Jacob just kind of faced up to that, knowing God was on his side? Or wouldn't it have been better if God had kind of caused Laban's heart to soften, that they could have left without the stealing and the chasing and the kind of moments of heart kind of pounding and the searching and the invading and the all that anger? I think sometimes I think of that for myself. Wouldn't it have just been better if I hadn't lied out of fear to my boss the other day? Wouldn't that have just been easier for me? That moment I got found out. All those sorts of things just floods my head in that moment. But I think it is clear that God brings reconciliation towards the end of the chapter, regardless of how many times Jacob has succumbed to fear or tried to manage a situation his own way out of deceit or cowardice. All those negative qualities of Jacob don't get in the way of God orchestrating, having his hand over it, looking after Jacob, showing him protection and provision, and graciously bringing reconciliation to the whole situation. God is seeing his own promises through here. And the second sense of that word fear is used in both verses 42 and 53. And if you have a look at verse 53, the second half of verse 53 with me, it says, so Jacob took an oath in the name of the fear of his father Isaac. It's the other sense of the word fear in this passage. The story's done. Laban has lost. It's game over for him. He recognizes that, and he asks for a peace treaty, one which he can't really renege on this time. And it does lead to genuine kind of, it feels like genuine hugs and kisses this time around. It feels like a real moment of peace and blessing, recognizing the great deal of pain that it took to get there. And this time, instead of fearing Laban, Jacob recognizes God. Jacob speaks of God as the fear of his father Isaac. Think of this moment. Jacob trusts God, fears God, more than he fears man of people. In fact, I think in this situation, they both recognize that God is the only one who can watch over them both, to protect them from each other, but also protect them when they're away from each other. It's a real recognition of God being the one who is truly powerful. And when they fear, God is watching over them. So what's the point of all of this? Why has this soap opera of the passage been included in Genesis? Why has the writer included this for us to read and learn from thousands of years later? Well, it shows us more of Jesus. That's as simple as. Jacob here is a really small picture of bringing a people home. A picture that Jesus fulfills thousands of years later, however much later. Jesus fulfills all those promises given to Jacob of a people under God being brought home. Well, Jesus died, he became the curse, he made a way for us to go home to be with God. But unlike the deceiver character Jacob, Jesus does it perfectly. Jesus, being perfect, died instead of the deceivers of the world. And he's invited us to trust in him, and we will be given life, and death will no longer be our destination. So if you're here today and you're not quite sure what you make of all that, you're not quite sure what to make of Jesus, that is a really good conversation point to pick up. Or if it's a situation where you've got friends who are thinking about who Jesus is, that's a really good place to kind of pick up the conversation. What does it mean that Jesus died to lead us home? And for those of us here who are Christians, we can remember Jesus' promise at the Great Commission. Matthew 28, verse 18, I'll read it out for us. Then Jesus came to his disciples and said, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age." Sounds a bit familiar, doesn't it? That's what God promised to Jacob. "I will be with you." I think that means that trust in God can triumph over our fears. Maybe that's something for us to all consider when we go home this evening. What are our fears? What, like Jacob, are we afraid of? Maybe it's physical fears of sickness or growing old. Or maybe it's the fear of other people, social fears. Maybe it's fears for our family or friends, not just of them, but for them, their welfare. What would happen to them if we're not around? Maybe it's the fear of singleness and loneliness. Maybe it's fears that come from seeing the world around us and the state that it's in, fears of war or of terrorism or of climate change or of being disrupted and forced to move, anything like that. And think of people in Ukraine. These things are genuinely scary, and they deeply affect the nature of our journey here on earth in this life now before life with Jesus to come. It does mean that when we are stuck in those hard times, God provides for us. We can remember that, and we can ask him to provide all the support we need. And it means that when we feel like fleeing or acting out or running away from our situations, our problems, we can turn to God for protection and ultimately know that death, the ultimate kind of threat of all these fears kind of at their nth degree lead to, that threat of death is conquered. And when we fear, we can turn our fear instead to trust in God, who's shown himself to be powerful. We fear him instead, knowing that he's the only one who can watch over us and our loved ones. I think that's calls for prayer, isn't it? Let's pray. Father, thank you for what you have won for us in Jesus dying on the cross. And thank you for this story to read today and how we see your character and see how you protect and provide for and watch over Jacob and his family. Thank you that we can trust that you're doing the same for us now, that in Jesus we can call you Father, we can cast our anxieties on you. I pray, Father, that in any fear that we come across, in any situation we find ourselves in, please help us by your Spirit in us turn to you first and foremost and trust you with our lives here now, and remember what Jesus has won for us for our life to come. Amen.